This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod episode 73. I'm your host Lewis and I hope you're all keeping well out there. I'm joined today by my co-host Mike, who is joining me for what is going to be one of our most niche, obscure DreamPod episodes yet. How are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing fantastically, Lewis, and I'm looking forward to this very, very niche episode.
Yes, and we just wanted to mention a specific game that we've been playing, because usually we do mention a game we've been playing, and me and Mike have both been playing one particular game, and I'm sure a lot of you out there have as well, and that is Animal Crossing New Horizons. Do you want to just tell us what you think of this game, Mike?
So I'm an Animal Crossing virgin. Is that the? I'm not quite sure if that's a phrase or not. I haven't played the games before. I played very, very briefly, and yeah, it's just a really relaxing, chilled out, nice game in this very uncertain time of lots of people being very worried by life generally. Animal Crossing is a lovely escape from that, and I don't know what I'm doing. I had to message Lewis last night and just sort of, you know, try and explain why I wasn't really sure what was going on, but I'm getting there. You know, I've got a switch in my room, and I've got some drunken seagull. I've already helped him communicate with his shipmates. It's going well.
Nice. I only played Animal Crossing very briefly. Well, not briefly. I played it for probably like one summer. I played it on the GameCube and I did enjoy it, and I never really got back into it until now. But my fiance, she played it on the DS and on the Wii, and she loves it. It's like, what, she likes some games, and this is one of the ones where she, you know, is really eager for it to get it when it came out. And I was kind of jumping on that as well, because everyone is been really talking about this game, and it's just really nice to sit back and just take turns playing it with her, and she's really into it. We've really got quite far on it, so as you said, Mike, it's just a really nice game to play during this time of uncertainty. For those listening in the future, we're talking about the coronavirus epidemic. Sorry to have to spell it out there, but you know, some people do listen retrospectively to our podcast. So
yeah, so I think this is when we record two different versions. It will be record one version where we go, oh, that virus, then we record the other version where we explain that was before the downfall of civilization, and Saturn and Dreamcast games become a new currency in our new post-apocalyptic future.
Yeah, get Animal Crossing if it's you just want something to calm you down, especially during these times. So the Dreamcast Junkyard and the Dream Pod is already pretty niche, but today we're going to be tumbling deeper down the Dreamcast rabbit hole at the end of episode 71, which was the one where we covered all the Capcom games on the Dreamcast. Mike mentioned that one of the other companies that heavily supported the Dreamcast in Japan was NEC Interchannel. They published a lot of visual novels on the Dreamcast. Of course, such an episode would be a little bit too ridiculous, but me and Mike, with no shred of irony, both gravitated to the idea of actually recording a Dream Pod about visual novels on the Dreamcast, as the system is home to many well-regarded ones. So right now, I'm sure a lot of you are hearing the word visual novel, and you're ready to click off the browser window or delete this episode from your phone. But maybe you don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. Maybe you're one of those people, but it's worth sticking around for this episode, because you'll learn a lot. Me and Mike are going to learn a lot, and hopefully we're all going to leave today having a renewed understanding of what visual novels are as a whole. So I'm sure there'll be a few who aren't aware of what visual novels are, or maybe don't really kind of completely get what they are. So Mike, is there a quick way you can explain them for everyone out there who may not be aware of what they are?
I think that it's very difficult to explain what visual novel is, because in the West, we use the term visual novel to describe a wide range of games. I know you're going to touch on this in a minute, Lewis, but there are several different forms of the game that in Japan are called different things and aren't actually the same sort of game. So you have love simulations, you have dating sims, you have mystery adventure novels. It's probably the closest you can get to a Western style game, I suppose, to an extent, would be something along the lines of an old text adventure, in terms of the fact that you are driving the narrative of a story, usually through making some choices or some decisions.
And quite a lot of the ones we're talking about today do have those branching paths. I mean, probably a more modern equivalent of the sort of branching path kind of game, you could probably say something like Heavy Rain or Life is Strange, those kinds. So they're obviously visual novels aren't as graphically intense as these. They are merely like just usually they feature anime characters. So you have an anime character on screen and then you'll converse with them. And then occasionally you may make a choice.
But even that doesn't really cover the entire thing, because while some visual novels or some games that we in the West call visual novels will just be simply clicking choices to progress a story, others will be quite in-depth, almost semi-management style games where you will manage your daily life, you will manage certain aspects. And all these games, like I said, we all class as visual novels. So it's a bit of a cop-out, I think, from us in the West, because we don't understand the language, because it's all in Japanese and heavily text-based. We like to group them all together. But so when we're actually discussing in this episode, actually, we're going to talk to you about many games through the next several minutes. And I think the defining feature on the Dreamcast, at least, is that these are all mainly love and dating sims. I think that's probably right, Lewis.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't really have as many of the mystery side of stuff or that kind of aspect. And there is that sort of a grey area as well, where it delves into then RPG territory. It delves into some action crossover games. So there is it's a very, very wide, genre. It's very daunting, I think, for anybody, especially for those of us who collect games for our sins. We will almost certainly have a large collection of dating and visual novels in our collection. And I think some people just do it simply because they want to have some extra filler on their shelf. But actually, I think it's doing the games a disservice, and people will dismiss these games very, very quickly. In actual fact, these are works of art to an extent. You know, the same as having any kind of book or any kind of a novel. And I think you really have to delve into it. And it is very difficult, and it does take a lot of work, which I know we're going to talk about soon as well, how to actually enjoy them. But the very basic concept for what a visual novel is an impenetrable, to those who aren't willing to put the time in, mainly text-based game.
I think that they kind of sit in this weird middle ground between being games and stories, because they're too novel to be games, but they're too visual to be novels. And, you know, I'm a gamer and I'm a writer as well, and I have friends in, like, you know, either community, and I don't feel like I could go up to, you know, the average gamer who likes the Dreamcast, he loves Sonic Adventure or Street Fighter or something, and go, hey, check this out. You know, he'd be like, this is just all text. Like, I don't want to read. I'm here to play games. Whereas the people who, you know, really read books and stuff, they might be like, well, this is on like a game console. Like, this isn't a book. So they're kind of weird like that. And
also a cultural thing as well, isn't there? There's a cultural element to this, in terms of the fact that these games are almost without exception heavily Japanese in their style, which is fantastic for those who are deep into that culture. For those of us who maybe aren't quite as deep into Japanese culture, it is very, very difficult to understand why or the themes behind the games. And I think that's something which is easily to do in other games. So if you know, Final Fantasy to an extent, those kind of games, all the many, many games that we have that are Japanese developed, even those with their heavily Japanese cultured elements in them, you can enjoy because of the action. The action takes precedence. With visual novels, you don't have that. And without having that sort of ingrained knowledge of the culture, I actually had someone once describe a visual novel to me as Shenmue if it didn't have the walking round. Now, that's a very weird description of it, but actually think about it, it's quite similar to an extent in terms of the fact that this is a very different style of experience, a very different experience you can't associate necessarily with on a personal level, and it's quite slow paced. I mean, these aren't the fastest games in the world, and it is very much a sort of a. I think I liked your description then of the fact that it was one foot in the writing community, one foot in the gaming community. That is very similar to, I think, what it is. It's a very Japanese thing, a visual novel. I don't think we compared it to Life is Strange, we compared it to Text Adventures. I don't think either really fully explain what the game is.
Yeah, I think if you have a big interest in anime, you're probably going to have an easier time getting into these because they are very anime-centric, really. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if off the top of your head, Mike, you can give us a ballpark figure of how many there are on the Dreamcast at all.
I'm honestly not sure. I think probably around 150 to 200 mark. I'm not actually sure of the actual figure.
Yeah, but we've sifted through and we've picked out the kind of the ones that are really worth your time and probably a good entry point to give these a go, because that, like Mike said, they are works of art and we should appreciate them like we would appreciate a good novel or a good game. Mike, I'm sure everyone else knows, you're the writer of the Dreamcast Junkyard A to Z, so you've endured, at least to some extent, every single visual novel. That's correct, isn't it, on the Dreamcast? You've played more or less all of them to some extent.
So I set myself, I was going to complete them all, because obviously I'm not that insane, but I set myself a goal of playing at least 1 hour of every single visual novel on the Dreamcast. So I've played every one for a certain amount of time, with a guide or without a guide.
Cool. Okay. So, was it writing the Junkyard A to Z that kind of made you interested in visual novels? Or did you have an interest before then? And what is it about them that kind of interests you so much?
I think for me, when I started my collection for Dreamcast, and when we sort of got into the console, a lot of people would speak about the fact of all games consoles being very full of impenetrable Japanese titles. And I thought, it's a bit of a cop-out. As I said earlier on, I think we in the West are very easy to say that something's not for us or something's not good or terrible. I wanted to really see what the games were like. And the artwork on these games is amazing much of the time. The actual packaging is amazing. The way they are all about them is just fascinating for me. I don't shy away from learning about other people's cultures or other things. So to me, it just seemed like a perfect way of experience something I didn't know. And also, there's always that sort of I talk on a Dreamcast podcast, so being niche is my sort of thing. Something which not many people do, so it's something which I can sort of have an interest in and experience something different.
For me, I kind of got into these because I loved anime, and I kind of found out about these games, and I really like the idea that you can play what is like an anime, but you can direct it in a way through various choices that, you know, about how you feel, you know, regarding the characters and where you are in the story, or how you feel morally in a certain situation. You know, if we're talking about the more sort of serious sci-fi ones, there's a sort of moral choices there. And through this, I kind of discovered more visual novels. They're kind of like those sort of choose your own adventure books, you know. I like that. As a writer and someone who enjoys literature, I like the idea that you can be in this story and have an effect over where it goes, you know. And that's probably why I like a lot of the, like I said, Life is Strange and games like that as well. I like the fact that you can kind of have an influence over the way the plot goes.
Yeah. I think it's worth mentioning as well, one of the reasons that the game or the genre, again, I use the word genre, it's not a genre of games, it's a wide breadth, but the reason visual novels themselves are sort of disparaged about is because of the connection with adult-based games in Japan. We haven't touched upon that yet. A lot of visual novels on the PC are known for having pretty... how can I describe this nicely? Pretty graphic sexual nature elements in it.
That's kind of now, the selling point, isn't it?
It is, exactly, yeah. It's exactly, and I think it's... That, again, is a very, very different culture. You know, we've all seen the covers with sort of schoolgirls on these games, and it's a little bit sort of not really... there's a massive cultural divide there. And I think what is important is that for people who are listening to this and who do want to sort of try some visual novels out, the Dreamcast games are not like this. Any game which is adult on a PC has been toned down considerably on Dreamcast versions and all console versions, I believe, apart from things like the PCFX. They're all going to have much, much lower levels. They're not, you know, we're not talking about really graphic hentai here. We are talking about sanitized versions for the mass pub, for the mass mainstream in Japan. And so don't worry about picking up games. The only game you've got to watch out for all of this is a game called Divi Dead, which isn't an official release. Catches a lot of people out. It's not an official release. It's a game which was, I believe, a PC game in Japan, was going to get a Dreamcast port, didn't. So you get a lot of people who will say that their favourite visual novel is Divi Dead. It's really not, and it's not an official game.
No. It's kind of a shame, really, that, I mean, I know there's certain people out there who do play these games for those elements, but a lot of them, like some of the ones we'll get to, actually kind of had them there as part, you know, they're trying to sell these visual novels, and they're like, right, we've got to put that in because that's our market in Japan. And actually a lot of these actually became known for being good for the story and the characters, and then eventually, and I'll tell you which game this is soon, they actually took those bits out for later releases, you know, on PC, and they've kind of become their own, you know, thing that's appreciated for the art, as opposed to, you know, just something that you pick up that's got a load of nude scenes in it. So yeah, I love it. We're kind of tiptoeing around you know, speaking too much in depth about that, but right. Without further ado then, let's get into this. So one of the games that I think quite a lot of fans of the pod may at least be aware of, because it was, I don't know if it was, it developed by Sega or a division of Sega?
Division of Sega.
Yeah, so that's Sakura Wars. And Sakura Wars is a tactical RPG mixed with a visual novel, mixed with a dating sim. So you can speak to these various characters, and when you win them over and get friendlier with them, I think there's some kind of, you know, there's romance bits in it, it helps them, sort of strengthens them in the battle segment, so the tactical battle segments.
There's a heavy level of RPG-ness in it, so it's not so much love relationships, although I do believe there is actually some elements of that. It's more just relationship building, so it's about, you know, getting people on side. It's no different than any other game in the West, really, where you sort of talk to people to become friends with them. I've been playing the Accuser series on PS4 recently, and obviously on that one you can talk to people and become friendly with them. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, I think Fire Emblem might be quite like this in the sense that you can sort of befriend these characters and they do better in battle, that kind of idea.
Yeah.
Another one, the Persona series is not tactical, but there's a lot of like sort of social elements in that. So I think anyone who is a fan of Fire Emblem, or like you said, Mike, Yakuza or Persona, any of these kind of Japanese games that are very kind of focused on sort of relationships between characters, I think you're probably going to quite like this. So there was four on the Dreamcast, wasn't there? And some kind of spin-off games. The first one only got a English, an unofficial release until last year, the end of last year, and that was a patch for the Saturn version of the game. But there is a high-definition remake coming to PS4 at the end of April in the West, so that one looks really good as well. So I recommend anyone checks out the trailer for that, because it looks like they've done a really nice job of it. Like, it doesn't feel like a, you know, half baked attempt to bring it back. So if you're interested in this series, you kind of have the option of playing it through with a guide. You could use the Google Translate app as well, or if you have a Saturn, you could try the English patch, or you could play the new one. So yeah, are you a fan of Sakura Wars, Mike?
I am, yeah. It's probably the one visual novel style game where I think everyone should try out. It's huge in Japan. I think it's, although it's becoming more and more obvious now in the West, for it's incredible just how big the series was in Japan. You know, we're talking about retail shops, we're talking about stage shows, which one of the games on the Dreamcast is the cast of the stage show of Sakura Wars, a game based on that cast. It's a very, very in-depth series in Japan. It was massive in Japan. And I think it's really got some great elements. The RPG elements and the tactical RPG elements are really, really good. They're good fun. You can play through a fair bit of the game without any knowledge of Japanese at all in that side of it. The actual talking bits and there's heavy, heavy text. I found Google Translate to be really, really useful. I did this probably like 3 years ago now. It was one of the first ones I really looked into, and it worked really, really well with Sakura. It really, really worked. Again, you're going to get a lot of odd things. I've said this before on a podcast, but one of my greatest translation errors was when the translation said that I was chasing the dog with a sausage. I'm not entirely sure what happened. It was a very odd one, but it's that kind of thing does happen, but it's a lot better now. Google Translate seems to be getting really, really good. And the guides are amazing. So game FAQs have some amazing guides on there. Sakura Tyson, Score Wars games, they are heavily in depth. They really go through everything you need to know, and if you've got the patience, you can really, really learn a lot from that. And they are definitely worth it. I think the graphics are lovely, the stories are fantastic. The story, a very, very brief outline of the story, is along the lines of, you are, I'm doing this from memory, so if I get it wrong, don't write and complain. basically, you are in command of a group of entertainers, dancers, who are basically a secret organization, who are spies and super soldiers, I suppose, to an extent. And they're based in Japan and also based in Paris in some later games, I believe.
Yeah.
So you have a sort of a very strange, the Japanese have a very strange fascination with France. It's well documented that there's a syndrome in Japan where Japanese tourists who go to Paris break down because of the fact that Paris is not what they are depicted as in their culture. And it's a very strange view. It's very similar to how we in the UK look at everything which is based on London, where it's sort of, you know, still very, very Victorian and very strange elements to it. So it's got a really weird feel to it, but really nice. The story's really, really good. The story's really well written, and there are a lot of games out there on the Dreamcast, especially. I think we worked out there was 8, possibly 9 Sakura Wars games. There's a Columns tie-in. There's a couple of online, well, there were online-enabled table games. There's a game based on the stage show, and I think there's another one as well, but at the current time it's escaped me.
There's so many. It's got a lot of steampunk sort of elements, hasn't it? Because it's based in the I've had to look this up, the Taisho, I probably pronounced that awfully, but the Taisho period of Japan, but with a steampunk twist, so there's a lot of mech combat in it as well. So that's a really kind of cool thing, because we see a lot of steampunk, you know, with the kind of like the Victorian feel, but it's cool to see it in a sort of traditional Japanese setting as well. Mm. So, you know, I'm kind of surprised, but not surprised that it didn't come to the West. just because of how big it was in Japan. But and so, you know, considering the amount of sort of experiments the Dreamcast, you know, brought over here, you know, like Seaman and all these weird games, you know, I thought they may have tried to bring this one over. But I think the first English translated, official English translated Sakura Wars game was the fifth one, which is on the Wii and the PS2. So that one maybe you could play as well if you're interested in picking that up. All right, so that's Sakura Wars. Now we've got two here that are from a company called Key, Canon and Air. And they're, I've basically wanted to include them because I think the maybe what you would consider the more traditional romance-based visual novel. And Key, one of these companies that popularized a genre of visual novel called Nakije, which means literally the crying game. And it's basically a visual novel where you play a storyline, you really grow to love the characters and appreciate the characters. You know, they have really strong characters, and then usually it will result in a bad event that will cause you to cry. Basically, that is, it's basically a emotionally written romance plot. Key were the main company to popularize this style of story. Key is the one I was mentioning, where their visual novels originally were 18 plus, but eventually, because they became so respected, now a lot of the games they've released have been re-released to be suitable for all ages. And yeah, Canon is probably one of my favorite visual novels. I absolutely love the 2006 anime adaptation of Canon. It's probably one of the first animes I really fell in love with. And so obviously to have a Dreamcast visual novel of one of my favorite anime series is really great. So I recommend any kind of adaptation of either Canon or Air. Mike, have you given these ones a go?
I have, yeah. So I agree with what you said. It's they're very much the traditional view of what a visual novel is when we describe it, in terms of its, I don't know if it's fair to say, but there's not as much interaction as maybe some other games that we're talking about. But I know they're massive anime and massive multimedia franchises in Japan, especially Air, which I believe was the highest selling one for quite some time. It's in the back, I'm sure that's probably wrong, but I'm sure in the back of my head it said something about that. But yeah, so it's, they are very traditional. They're very, very difficult to get into unless you are big fans of the anime. That's one thing I will say. I know you are, Lewis. Yeah. I think it is harder for those of us who aren't, because there is a massive difficulty in getting into a game without knowing anything about it. So I would probably say to people, watch the anime first, or get into it in that way first of all before you play the game, because that will probably get you a lot easier, because you can then identify with things in the game a lot easier than just going straight in and trying to use a guide to explain everything.
Yeah. You can play these with English patches on PC, and obviously please be aware that the PC versions do have the sort of 18 plus scenes, but there are patches to actually remove them. The Key went on to develop some other visual novels that you can actually get on Steam in English. And so you've got Clannad, which is also on PS4 in English, and Planetarian. I highly recommend Planetarian. It's probably one of the best visual novels I've ever played. That is actually one where it's completely text. It doesn't actually have any gameplay elements. So obviously approach that one with caution if you're looking for an actual game. But if you want a really amazingly written, sort of emotional piece of writing, then Planetarian's fantastic. Right, so now we're moving on to another really great company, and that is Kid, who developed Ever 17 and Never 7. And these are actually, while based around high school characters, are really intricately written sci-fi stories. Mm-hmm. So RPG Fan actually put Ever 17 as the 18th best role-playing game of the 2000s, calling it a pinnacle of visual novels and calling the storylines one of the most emotionally charged, intense, deep and compelling ever seen in a video game. So, you know, you might see these visual novels and just think, oh, it's just shelf filler. But, you know, as you can hear from that quote, we're dealing with pieces of art here. So to give an outline of the plot, basically a group of high school students go to this underwater. Is it a theme park or an aquarium, Mike?
Theme park, yeah.
And basically they get trapped underwater in this theme park. And they're trying to survive. And it's a game that actually has multiple arcs. So you play it once and then you play it again. And as you go through it, you kind of unveil more of this conspiracy about the company that made this theme park. There's something up with it, you know, and you kind of unveil that as you go through. So, and there's quite a lot of really emotional moments. Mike, what do you want to say about this one?
Yeah, so Ever 17 especially, Never 7 not quite so much, but Ever 17 is widely regarded as probably the pinnacle of this type of game. There are a lot of, you touched upon the fact that there's lots of different arcs and lots of different storylines. There are numerous, I think a dozen possibly different endings in the game. Mm-hmm. And there are, a lot of these games will reward repeated playthroughs. It's sort of a given where with novels that you have to play it through more than once, which again is quite alien for some of us, I think, in the West. But you have to play through them more than once and you'll discover more things in them. The entire game it's got a real foreboding sort of atmosphere. It's got a real, I think even more because we don't understand the language perfectly, it's got a really strong foreboding, mysterious element to it. There's lots of different sort of plot drops in there where suddenly you'll something else will happen which you're not quite sure what's going on. It reminds me a lot of... maybe not so much in the horror element, but it reminds me very much of a Japanese horror film. That sort of quite slow-paced... It's not horror-based, I will define... make that sure to everybody. It's not a horror-based game. I'm using that simply as a sort of a metaphor in terms of... because of the language barrier, the entire game has this sort of very weird edge to it, which makes it really, really quite amazing to play. It's the one game I've probably played the most of, I think. It's been quite a few years since I've played it now. But this and Never 7, I think, are by far and away the best examples of more traditional type of visual novel, or on the Dreamcast, I should say, sorry. It's a very, very good game. I think we've touched upon, because there's a series of games. I think there's a third game as well, Lewis. I think you know more than I do about this one. Because there's two games in the series, Never 7 Never 17. No, there's a third as well. It's all part of the Infinity series, isn't it? There's a series of games called the Infinity series. Which are very, very highly regarded in Japan as well. There's actually two versions of Ever 17 on the Dreamcast as well. There's the normal version and the premium edition. So it's very, very highly regarded.
Yeah, I think the one of the people who worked on this actually went on to make the Zero Escape series. So if you like that writing, then... you know, these are definitely worth checking out. You can play both Ever 17 and Never 7 on PC. There's an English patch for both. There is also, for some reason, English patches for the DS and PSP. So maybe the PSP is probably a better way to play it because it's portable. You know, it'd be like reading a book, you know.
Worth mentioning as well, though, Ever 17 is very playable with a guide. I mean, you're going to have to do quite a lot of, you know, back and throwing between guides and game, but it is very playable. Google Translate, a good guide from game FAQs, you can progress easily.
Kid also developed Memories Off, which is probably more of the sort of high school romance based visual novel. And then you also have My Merry May, which... I didn't actually realize this. I don't believe it was ever on the PC. It was actually a console visual novel, which is quite an uncommon thing to occur. So that's another one by them that's worth checking out.
A good one as well, yeah. There's a follow-up to that as well, My Merry Maybe.
Yeah. Right, so Next, we have Aqua Plus or Leaf. I believe Leaf is the developer, and then Aqua Plus was the company that sort of ported these games to the Dreamcast. And when I say games, I should say game, because they did one, and that is Comic Party. But Leaf and Aqua Plus, they're very revered as visual novel developers. They developed quite a lot of famous ones as well, like Two Heart and other series like that. But Comic Party is one we wanted to mention because it does deviate quite a lot from the norm for visual novels, and it incorporates point and click elements and the organizing of the main characters' schedule over the different weeks. And this is all surrounding Japanese manga culture and Dao Jinshi. You know, he's writing his own independent manga and selling them at conventions. And then there's sort of a dating sim element as well. So you've got to basically organize all that different stuff in his schedule. Probably the week-based time management system's probably quite like the RPG series Persona. So if you like that, you're going to like Comic Party. What do you think of Comic Party, Mike?
Yeah, it's a good game. It's one of these games, as you said, where there's more of an organizational side, more of a strategic side to it. A few of the visual novels, mainly the dating sims and the love simulation ones, will have this extra Persona style organization, which is a great example, actually, because Persona is probably the one game where that style of organization is quite known to the Western audience. But Comic Party's got a really good game. It's got some really good humor in the game, which is not always present in every visual novel. And it's the normal high quality aesthetics. I think one thing we haven't mentioned in the other games we talked about is the graphics and the sound. And the reason for that is pretty much these games look really good. The graphics are always great on all these games. But Comic Party has got a real individual style to it, really lovely, sort of. It's almost like a fan service game. It's not, but it feels like a fan service sort of game.
Unfortunately, there's no English translation for Comic Party. But like Mike said, there's guides out there and you can use Google Translate if you need to. Mm-hmm. Because this is definitely one that's really cool, you know, as far as the kind of organizational side. You know, it's a little bit more than just choosing the odd thing here and there. It's more involved. And some other sort of stuff relating to this that might be of interest is there's a PS3 game called Aqua Paza, which is a fighting game kind of like Arcana Hearts that features a lot of these Aqua Plus Leaf characters, features some of the characters from Comic Party. And if you want to play anything else from these developers, there's a series called Utaware Ramono and Tears to Tiara, which are both kind of like Sakura Wars, visual novel, tactical role-playing games. So they're also really worth playing. They're all on PS4, those Utaware Ramono games, and Tears to Tiara is on PS3. So they're definitely worth checking out. It's a really good bunch of developers who make these. Okay, so we're kind of going on to a bit of a weirder one now, which is Real Sound, Kaze no Regret. So this was originally on the Saturn, but there is a Dreamcast port. And Kenji Ino, who, if you're aware of him, you may know him from D or Enemy Zero or D2, yeah. That trilogy. Really unique, weird games. But we've talked a lot on the podcast about how much we like them and we kind of appreciate the vision he had. And this is another game that is less of a visual novel and more kind of an audio novel. So it was actually designed because Kenji Ino thought about what's a game that could be enjoyed by both able-sighted people and blind gamers. So he developed this game with that in mind. You know, you could play it together, and then you and the person who's blind could speak about the game, and you'd have the same amount of enjoyment out of it. I believe the Saturn version was completely black. There was no graphics, but then I believe the Dreamcast version, it does have some kind of backdrops to accompany the audio. So Yeah, quite a cool story with this one. I read that Kenji Ino actually said to Sega, "I'll give you exclusive rights to this game on your consoles if you donate Saturn consoles and the game to blind gamers." So, yeah, Kenji Ino is a really cool guy. You know, this is another one of his really sort of unique games. One that, as I'm sure Mike will mention, is probably quite difficult to play, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's impossible to play unless you know Japanese. Obviously, there are tools available to translate audio, but I didn't really find it very easy to do. So I only know the game from people talking about it and people actually discussing the game. It's one of these games which sort of transcends a normal game. It's the idea of making a game for blind gamers is quite amazing, and I think that the Dreamcast version had so many little elements. For instance, the instructions are in Braille. I mean, that's a real amazing touch. And I think also the fact that the game is, from all accounts, quite a good, very, very well-written story. And there was no real gimmick. So I know it's very easy to make a game for a certain group of people and make it quite a gimmicky sort of game. From all accounts, this game isn't like that. It's very much a really high quality, well produced audio novel.
For people who are in the West, I think probably one of the main reasons for actually picking this game up was the D2 Shock demo. It's loads of D2 related mini games. So yeah, that's definitely one worth checking out. I think Tom wrote an article on the Junkyard about it, so that's probably worth giving a read if you want to know more about that. I've talked quite a lot about a lot of these visual novels, and Mike, Boulder Force EXE, I think you're a fan of this one, aren't you?
I am, in terms of it's an interesting game. It's probably the most loose definition of what a visual novel is, in terms of really it's by very little definition could it be called a visual novel. It is an action-based game. However, there are pretty strong elements of visual novel in it. It's a sort of a cyber hacking sort of style game where you basically control mechs I think it's a simulation. It's been a while since I've played it. I think it's a simulation-based thing where you actually play mechs within the simulation. But basically, there's sort of a combat involving your different characters, and it plays really well. It's really smooth. As an action game, it's actually pretty good. The visual novel side itself is also quite deep. It's very, very text heavy. It's lots and lots of content in there. It's based on an anime series, I believe, in Japan, which was quite popular. I think it also got a UK or an English, sorry, translation. So it is possibly going to be palatable for people to actually enjoy. I know a friend of mine who's big into anime is a good fan of the series. The game is also quite expensive, I will point out to people. It's a really difficult game to get hold of for a good price in this country. But it is definitely worth it, just for the action elements alone. But unlike other games like Skrilla Wars, where you can sort of probably get through the written bits quite easily with a guide, Boulder Force, there's a lot more to go through. So it will test your patience, but it's definitely worth it. And the story itself is really high quality. Another sci-fi story, like with Ever 17 and Ever 7. Not all visual novels are going to be high school based. Some of them are really deep sci-fi, and they're always really engrossing for people who a little bit of a break from the normal romance heavy side.
We've also got another game here that I just want to jump to, because this is another game that combines quite sort of heavy sort of visual novel style bits with quite involved gameplay, and that's Blue Submarine Number 6. And Mike, I've only really sort of looked at gameplay footage of this, but you've properly played this. You quite like this one.
Yeah, another really very similar to Boulder Force in terms of it's really highly regarded. Again, based on I think it's a 6-part anime series, and possibly some novels as well, graphic novels in Japan, quite a long-standing franchise. But again, yeah, really good. It's got lots of elements of underwater action. So it's, as the title sort of points towards, it's about a submarine-based ship. And there are lots of elements of underwater gameplay. So you do actually have combat underneath water. But there's lots of heavy visual novel elements as well. As with all the anime games, a lot of the story is progressed using visual novel-style techniques. So the graphics here are fantastic. I mean, for both sides, both the actual action side and also the visual novel side of it, the graphics are gorgeous, cel shaded, look fantastic. Really good game, but again, a game which is going to cost you a lot of money in the UK or in Europe to pick up, which is a bit of a shame because it's definitely one which is worth going for. I think they're really highly regarded in Japan. I think this is one of the games which had sort of, I don't know if it's mass mainstream appeal, but we're definitely more appealing to a wider audience in Japan. So actually the price is probably reflective of the price in Japan rather than the price of Western gamers.
Okay, we've got some other ones here. So I'm about to butcher this. Kimi ga Nozumu E. I'm not going to even try that. It's known as Rumbling Hearts. Well, at least the anime was translated into English as Rumbling Hearts. This is just more one worth mentioning because of the anime series. The anime series was really popular. It's one of those more romantic drama kind of storylines where, you know, if you're in sort of anime communities online, they always recommend Rumbling Hearts. I personally couldn't get on with it. I thought it was a little bit overly dramatic, but the original visual novel is on the Dreamcast, so that's worth a mention. Also, another series, with there's two of these, the Love Hina games, and I absolutely love Hina. It was one of the first mangas I properly read. I think there's about 14 volumes. I read all of them. Like, I was absolutely obsessed with Love Hina. It's such a well-written series with such great characters. And there's two games on the Dreamcast. There's Smile Again and, oh no, not more Japanese to pronounce. Totsuen no Engiji, Happening. Sorry, Japanese people, for ruining your lovely language. But yeah, I quite like the look of these because I like the way you can actually like explore the building that yes. is a big feature of the manga. This guy is trying to get into university. He moves into this dormitory, and then it turns out that actually it's a girls only dormitory. So it's quite one of these sort of like daft American comedy kind of plots, like American Pie or something. It's like, oh, the big harem. So, but it's a bit deeper than that. Like, there's a lot more to it than just, you know, a guy with a load of girls. There's a lot of really deep sort of plot lines here.
As a game itself, it reminds me quite a lot of the adventure elements of Sakura Wars. That sort of isometric sort of look to it. It really isn't. It's a bit of an injustice, I suppose, calling it visual novel in terms of if we're going to use it in the sort of generic way that we call games, because it's much more of an adventure than it is a visual novel. The games are very similar. I think it's just literally a sequel. So Smile Again is a sequel. I think it's just literally sort of a different story rather than sort of being a different style of game. I actually got on with these games quite good. It's a really interesting story. I say really interesting story. It's got an interesting story in terms of the way it's sort of presented. There's a lot of elements in the games which I think you probably would need to know the source material or the other forms of media to really get. But, you know, they're passable. They're not going to be as popular as something like Sakura Wars, simply because of the fact they haven't got the action elements, which I think break up Sakura Wars quite a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, still decent games.
So is the gameplay kind of, you know, you walk around, you speak to one person, and then maybe you need to go somewhere else and speak to them? Is that kind of the gameplay, or is there a little bit more to it?
I mean, it's similar. It's partly that. It's also partly sort of some aspects of schedule management.
Yeah.
It's very much a sort of a low-key RPG type game, which I think makes it probably a little bit more easy to understand for gamers in some ways, because obviously there's a bit more to do than just literally wade through text, but also makes it a little bit harder to actually progress because of the fact that there are more options to do things. It's not just one sort of storyline or just branching storylines. It's a bit more action. I'm going to use action in a very loose term. A bit more action involved.
Okay. So I feel like this is the perfect game to jump into what we want to talk about next, which is actually the plethora of mad Japanese collector's editions. Because Love Hina has two... I think they're quite big, aren't they? These massive boxes. Collector's editions. And Mike, you own quite a lot of these, so I think you're the best person to lead here. So if you want to take it away.
Yeah, so one of the great joys of collecting for Dreamcast, especially Japanese games, even if you don't understand the language, is the ridiculous limited editions that you can get. And two of the probably most notable of these limited editions are actually Lufina games. Lufina Smile Again, which is a sequel, it's a smaller box. So you're probably looking at a size of box. I'm trying to look at my shelf now. It's probably about the same size as a light gun box, that sort of size. And in it, you've got a towel, you've got a bowl, you've got chopsticks, you've got other little bits and pieces in there. The other one, which I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of, because I'm not going to embarrass myself, it comes in a box that can only be described as the size of a small town. I think it stands 3 foot tall. It's not quite as tall. I think it's about 2 foot tall. And it is huge. And it is literally one of the most ridiculous size boxes for any game I've got.
So how big is it compared to a Dreamcast console box?
Looking at my shelf at the current time, it's next to a Hello Kitty box. So the Hello Kitty box is actually on its side, so led down, and it is the equivalent of 3 Hello Kitty boxes in size.
Oh, wow.
That's our new size definition in the Dreamcast Junkyard, is Hello Kitty boxes.
So if you want this collector's edition, you might want to, you know, clear some space out.
But it is awesome. It's like, what, inside it, you've got some amazing things. You've got a clock. You've got, I think you've got a towel. I'm not sure what's in there at the current time, though. That's what I started saying about it. But it's a huge amount. It's just the amount of content in there. We've been blessed in the West. I'm not sure if blessed is a word, but in the last 20 years, we've had a lot more limited editions. So we're all gamers now. We've probably got one or two limited editions on our shelves. You know, Gears of War statues, or you've got, you know, cars from certain games recreated in plastic. But I think in 2001, 2000, I think it was quite uncommon. I can't think of any games really before 2000 in the West had limited edition pieces at all. So it's really uncommon, and to know in Japan they had all this stuff, and some of the content in these games is quite incredible. I know that one piece in the Lufina games, and especially, Lewis, you are particularly excited by, aren't you?
Is this the little turtle? Is that
indeed
the one?
It is. Yeah.
But there's a little turtle in the manga, and it's just like, it just shows how talented the artist was. If you ever read the manga of Lufina, every panel is filled to the brim with something. Every page is from top to bottom is completely covered in art. And this little turtle is sort of a little thing that is in the background, and it's fun to see if you can spot him in different panels. So he's quite well loved for, you know, by fans of Lufina. But yeah, it's a plush, isn't it, that you get in the
So you game. Get a plush in the, yeah, the second one you've got a plush. In the first one you get a plush. Second one you get a little ceramic statue of him instead.
That's amazing. I might have to seek these out now, especially seeing as the games sound pretty cool too.
The great thing is with both these games, actually, and the great thing with limited editions on Dreamcast in general, people, I think people are spending massive amounts of money on these games. They're really not expensive. No. I think the first Lufina game I bought cost me about £15. So, and the second one, which is the massive one, again, I say second one, it was the first of the series, probably cost me £15 again. Really wasn't expensive at all. And what you get in the actual game, if you're a fan of the series, then it's a obvious choice, because you're getting merchandise for hardly anything at all. And the games are definitely worth it. Most people will have these collector's editions, and they will literally have them because they're collector's editions. I appreciate that. I'm not someone to criticise that. But if you're going to buy these games, give the game a chance. Give the game a chance and just and see what the game's like. And I think that's a great thing to do with Lufina games. As you said, they are games which are definitely penetrable for Western audiences more so than other games like Air and Cannon, for instance.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised when I went to Japan that a lot of these big box visual novel collector's editions are really cheap. I actually picked up, there's one for Comic Party, which comes with, it's a figure, some kind of card, and then like an art book. And yeah, that was really cheap. It was actually cheaper than other, like, just normal games that didn't have all this extra stuff with them. I don't know if it's just because it was a visual novel. As far as the collector's market worldwide, maybe there's not as many people in the West that are like snatching up these collector's editions because no one wants to play them. There's only people like us who actually find them interesting. So
yeah,
maybe that's why they're not as expensive. So
definitely. I think that's definitely true. I think the collector's editions are by far cheaper than buying standard games on, you know, PAL versions or American versions. But I think people who turn their nose up at buying them, I think just got to realise that, you know, we've all got lots of games on our shelves. Most of them don't get played a huge amount of times. These games are cheaper. They look awesome. And I think actually it's just a fun thing to do. If you are collecting, it's a fun thing to get.
Are there... is it mainly... This is something I'm not actually sure about, and you may be able to answer this. Is it mainly visual novels that do have collector's editions on the Dreamcast, or are there other non-visual novel games?
So, in total, there are 138 limited edition of some type Japanese games on Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say from that, and this is a rough estimate, I'd probably say about 60, so slightly less than half are probably visual novels.
Yeah, yeah.
Bigger games do get them as well, so you do have things like Space Channel 5 and Jason Radio and things like that in Japan. But a lot of the visual novels do have them, and the reason for that is pretty obvious, I think, is simply because of the fact that these games don't sell massive amounts, even in Japan. They're not, apart from things like Air, which sold lots of copies, games don't sell massive amounts of copies. So actually, these limited edition box sets are there to entice people, and I think especially for people, if it's a game which is based on a franchise which is known in other media, it makes a lot more sense for them to include a plush toy or something, or something to get fans involved with the game. So there are several, there are some that aren't visual novel games as well, but for the majority, I would say probably, because I've said there's 60 games out of 138 were visual novels, so some of those have several versions. So some Secure Wars ones, for instance, have probably four or five versions. So there are many of them, many of them to get.
There's also a Sakura Wars Dreamcast, isn't there? There's actually two. Is there two of them?
I think so. There's one, definitely. Sakura Wars Dreamcast, which is pink with the cast of characters on the front. I think there is a second one, which I think is quite a rare one. There was a Metal Jesus Fox video. Metal Jesus Fox went to Japan, and he was doing some video shoots in one of the stores, and it floated past a window, and there was a picture of a Sakura Wars console, which just had the writing Sakura Wars on the console. And it just sort of caught my eye as I was watching it, and it was like, whoa, that's a bit weird. So I tweeted it out and sort of said, anyone else noticed this? And then someone put me in touch with someone posted some information. It is known, and it is known about. I can't remember what the actual console's about now, but it is known about. I think it's only one in the world, though. I think it actually is the only one that they know about.
Oh, wow. To be fair, I might have walked past it in Japan, because weirdly, Metal Jesus Rocks and all his friends were in Osaka at the same time I was, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll like see them as I'm walking around, but I didn't. But I probably went to quite a lot of the same shops, like Super Potato and stuff like that. So yeah, is there any other visual novel collector's editions you want to cover, Mike, or is Love Hina the real jewel in the crown?
No, I think there's a few more, actually, just to very briefly touch upon. I think the Cardcaptor Sakura, which I'm led to believe is also quite a large franchise in Japan.
And in the West, it's
really interesting, actually, because it's got some really good stuff in that box. So it's a box the same sort of size as the second Lapina game. Comes with a plate, knife and fork, tablecloth, and a clock, I think, as well, actually. You've also got some things like Castle Fantasia, which is a alarm clock, proper alarm clock, which is a great story about this one. It's a normal sort of silver alarm clock, but I didn't realise it would keep on going off if I set it. So for several weeks, like every day, the alarm clock would go off and I could never actually get it reset. So buy that one with caution. There's another game called Iris, which is got a hand puppet in it. It's actually one of the only ones I don't actually own. It looks amazing, but there's a game called Iris which has a hand puppet in the box. You've got Sakura Wars games as well. They have some amazing bits with them. You've got a lovely little music box in Sakura Wars 3. There's two different limited editions of Sakura Wars 3. You also got some of these Scroll Wars spin-offs, which are actually table games. They come with some a pink keyboard in one of them, and it comes with a wall clock in the other one. But one I want to sort of just very, very briefly touch upon is a game called Mizuro, which inside the game has a phone card in there, which many of these games have phone cards, which is, again, I think a very uniquely Japanese thing. But it also comes with a tin. I'm not really sure what's in the tin, because it's an actual sort of tin can, which is unopened, obviously. I'm slightly scared to ever want to open the tin, but there is a tin inside it.
Hopefully it's not food or something.
I hope not, because if it is, it'd be weird. But I think it shows how many different games had these little elements to them. I mean, there's other ones we haven't even touched upon, things like Sister Princess, which had a, I think it's 16 different phone charms of all the characters in the game.
Oh, wow.
Which is a fantastic sort of little added extra. You've got, again, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but Nakaruru, which is based on a character from SNK Fighters, I believe. Which That's got a little buildable figure in that one. You've got Attilia, which has, as well as having a CD which will do a virus on a computer, as we've discussed on the podcast before, has a little phone strap with that one. There's so many little elements, so many games that have these little tiny bits with them. Mm. It's a really interesting way of collecting stuff, and I think it's something which, if you do want to get into that side of things, it's actually quite a cheap way, and it's just cool.
Yeah, it sounds like if you are a fan of these particular properties, especially the anime adaptations, the anime visual novels, then you're gonna be really in for a treat. And it sounds like there's a lot of cutlery and clocks in the
There is a lot, and it's actually funny you said that about the fact if you're into the anime, it's not a visual novel, but one of the Evangelion games has a backpack.
Oh, wow.
And my friend is a massive fan of the series, and he every time he sees it, he wanted the backpack. There's some really, really cool pieces for anime series. They're actually probably slightly bigger now in the West. Mm. I think anime is seeing somewhat of a resurgence again in the West. We have this every few years, don't we, where everyone seems to be really into anime, but at the moment it seems to be quite a big thing. I think possibly with Netflix.
Yeah,
I know
absolutely.
For me personally, I've been watching the first series of JoJo's Bizarre Adventures on Netflix. I've never seen the series before. And it's really interesting. So I think a lot of these games may be coming around again. I have noticed with the prices of Dreamcast games is that the series which are more popular at the current time will keep their prices quite well. So things like... funny enough, with JoJo, it's not a visual novel, but with JoJo, for some reason, that game, again, has gone up in price, which I think is just testament to how these games cycle around and it's more popular and less popular. Yeah. And a lot of new fans to the series will then discover that Dreamcast games are there, will find that these got these cool extras to these games, and then actually become Dreamcast fans as well, which is a great added bonus for those of us who are in the business of making Dreamcast content.
Okay, so hopefully... we've convinced some of the naysayers out there that visual novels are actually pretty cool. Even if it's just to get some sort of extra gubbins to put on your shelf via the collector's editions. But thanks for joining me on this one, Mike.
No problem.
I feel like to wrap up, I just wanted to mention that you've been putting out the Dreamcast Junkyard World Cup on our Twitter. So there's a lot of polls that you can join in with, and we're basically doing sort of like an elimination style World Cup of all these different Dreamcast games going head to head. So I don't know if you want to give everyone a little bit of more info about that.
Yeah, so everyone's on a bit of lockdown at the current time, so I think to lighten the mood, we've wanted to try and get some involvement from our viewers and our readers. We've just gone through the first group stages. We had 64 groups of four games, so 256 games in total. Each group had one winner, and so very, very shortly, by the time this podcast is out, we'll be in the knockout rounds. And it'll basically be one poll, which will last 2 days, and we'll do a couple a day. and vote for the game you find a favourite, all the way through to the end, where we will endeavour to try and give the winning game and try and contact the developer in some kind and try and say to them, yeah, you've won a Dreamcast competition several years after you've cared. But it's just another great way of doing something for Dreamcast. I think it's great to see these little bits of input from people, people talking about games they haven't seen before. We've actually had two visual novel groups, because I wanted to make sure visual novels were represented. Comic Party did win one of the groups. I believe the other group was won by Sakura Wars. So we had Sakura Wars against a few other ones, and it won that one. So just another great way of talking about Dreamcast. We're all a bit obsessed with the console, so fun.
I've been looking forward to sort of seeing how these polls pan out every day. It's been quite a highlight every evening to sort of see the results of how everyone voted. So there's a few polls that have caused a bit of rage in some people, but that's only natural with this kind of thing. Okay, so Mike, where can we find you on the internet?
So I am on Twitter at @space_turnip. I'm also on the Dreamcast Junkyard Twitter account itself. It's often me making scandalous and scurrilous remarks on there. I also do a site called Dreamcast Picks, which is at Dreamcast Picks, I believe. If it's not, then I apologise. But that's got a few Dreamcast games for my collection, because I have nothing else to do with my life. And apart from that, I'm around the podcast.
Yeah, that account, the Dreamcast Picks, that's actually probably where you've shared quite a few pictures of these visual novel collector's editions. So anyone who's sort of intrigued as to how they actually look, Mike has put up a few photos on there. There's quite a lot of really cool stuff on that Twitter account. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at LewisJFC. I'll be tweeting on the Junkyard Twitter account as well. And obviously you've just heard me on this podcast. So take care and stay safe out there with everything going on, and we'll see you in the next one.